And there's going to be a strength. My goal, my desire, what I feel like God wants to do is he wants to reposition people into a place in his love where they're empowered to actually live the lives that God's called them to live, not in isolation and independence, but in community, in family, in his body, in his house, with him as their father. Wow. It's fun to look around the room. By the way, just so you know, I can see your face. You know, there's always different parts of the room that you look at, and there's other parts of the room that you look at once and then you don't look back again. That might sound harsh, but I know, and I'm sometimes one of those people, because here's what happens, is you get so like, yeah, I'm just listening. Just listening. And you get that like I get that too, you know, like that, you know, that I can't do it now, but it's like, hang on. And really what it is, it's a concentrating face, you know, it's that you're actually wanting to hear what I'm saying. And I do appreciate that, but I'm just trying to set you up to set me up to be encouraged. There's no judgment if you have that face, but what I'm saying is you have the power to put a little tiny curvature in your lips. And I'm seeing it's changed. The room's changing right now, and there's smiles all over the room. And I'm feeling like, wow, I feel like now I can preach the message. Thank you guys for being for me. I'm just appreciating this encouragement. Mark, thank you. And Grace, thank you. Amazing smile, you guys. Lee, always an amazing smile. Wow, you guys are amazing. Sorry if that sounded, it actually came out wrong, but Sean was just saying we're secure. I was thinking, well, I wasn't secure for a little second there, so thank you for helping me feel secure. I want to share something for a little bit, and then we're going to do something as a community. And you're not going to just be, my heart is that you can if you want, but my heart is, and the invitation, once I've shared what I'm going to share, is going to be that we all get involved in doing something at the end of this. And so, but I want to share something first to set that up. And what I want is, I don't want revival. I don't want revival as much as I want habitation. Because here's the thing, guys. We've had revivals that have struck the planet like lightning. We've had the John G. Lakes. We've had the Smith Wigglesworths. We've had the Evan Roberts. We've had William Seymour. We've had Azusa. We've had Toronto. We've had these different revivals that have struck the planet with incredible power, with incredible encounters, with people all over the floor, laughing, crying, and encounters in heaven, encountering Jesus, people getting saved, people getting healed, people getting delivered, and that is beautiful. But all of that happens in order to move us to where God intends us to be, which is he wants habitation. He wants a place to dwell on the earth. He wants a place to dwell, not in like just a tiny bit of his glory, but he wants a place to dwell in fullness. He wants a place where he can be with a group of people and stretch out his arms and go, man, I feel at home here. Yes. Man, this is my, what do we need for a habitation? We need a habitat. What's the kind of habitat that God is looking for where he feels like he can stretch out his arms and fully be himself? Yeah. Because I think God can be himself to a degree. He can express himself to a degree in my life personally as I'm walking down the street. He can step into any habitat and manifest his goodness in one way or another. And one drop of God's goodness is enough to blow your brains. It's enough to make you think, whoa. So it makes me ask the question, what would it look like to have a habitation of the fullness of his glory on the earth, which I don't think is something we have seen yet. But I'm putting my hand up as an individual member of this body. I'm putting my hand up saying, I want that. I want to see, I want to dive into this. I want to know what, I want to discover what it looks like, what it feels like, what kind of transformation takes place when there is a habitation of God on earth. And yeah, I want revival, but if it stops at revival, I don't want revival. Revival is to re-bring back vive life, to bring back to life. But then what do you do when you're alive? When you're alive, how do you live? Because if we get brought back to life, but then there's nothing about how do we live, then we just die again. If Mila gets born, hey, Mila. Hey, buddy. Hey, you, buddy, 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 hey. That's my baby. If Mila gets born and we're like, yes, life, right, next thing. And there's no like, we don't teach Mila how to live. Like, she needs to be taught how to eat and everything. And if no one teaches her that, then she dies. We want revival, but we also want to know the ways of life. I want to know what kind of habitat does life thrive in? And I want to build that habitat, whether we're experiencing what we would consider revival or not. I want us to be intentional about building a habitat for a habitation. And I think the clearest, I mean, I don't think, this is a clear and obvious truth. If you read anything about Jesus in any of the four Gospels and you go through into the rest of the New Testament, you can read this clearly, and it is there's no doubt, there's no question about it, is that the clearest revelation of what God's like and who God is that He's a Father. I mean, Moses had a revelation about what God's like. Elijah had a revelation about what God's like. Joseph had a revelation about what God's like. But the full revelation of what God's like, the complete expression of who He is, only comes from one person, Jesus. And Jesus declared, this is who God is. He is not my Father, not your Father. He's our Father. The clearest revelation of what God's like and who He is, before He's a master, before He's a teacher, before He's a Lord, before He's God, before He's creator, He is first of all, at the foundation level, Father. Before anything else, He's Father. The clearest revelation of God is that He's Father. The greatest revelators of God, the people that understand His nature the best are sons. The platform of sonship is a platform that a revelation of who God is and what He's like rests on. So if God is a Father, it makes sense that those who most clearly reveal what God's like are sons. And that's why Jesus came as the firstborn son. I should smile more too, huh? Totally. And therefore, and I'll explain this in a second, but the greatest carriers of God are those who walk in family. The greatest revelation of God is He's a Father. The greatest revelators of God are sons, and the greatest carriers of God are those that walk in family. And my question is this. I went to the zoo, you know, and I'm in the zoo, and I get to the polar bear arena at the zoo. And I notice that the polar bear arena is not like 500 degrees heat. It's not like palm trees and sand and desert plants. Because a polar bear wouldn't be able to survive in that kind of habitat. So at the zoo, they create a habitat so that the polar bear feels like it can be himself. And so it's not a desert. It's a snowy, icy, cold, blue, white habitat. And then I go to the snake section, and in the snake section, it's not ice. It's a different habitat. Because the guys that run the zoo are asking the question, what kind of habitat is most conducive for a snake to be alive? And then I go to the monkey place, and the monkey place is different again. The monkey place has trees. It has all these different ropes in the trees, all these things to swing from, little rivers going through. And you think, that's different to the snake one, and it's also different to the polar bear one. It's totally purpose-built, conducive to the life of a monkey being fully expressed. So my question is, what kind of habitat does a father look for? If God is Papa, then and our job is let's steward an environment, let's steward a culture, let's steward a habitat that is going to be for a habitation, not of a snake, not of a polar bear, not of a monkey, but of a father who is God. Then what kind of habitat is a father looking to dwell in? Yes, truth, but truth of what? The truth of family. Where do you find a father? If you're looking for, okay, I'm going to try find a, I need to find a father somewhere. I've heard that there's fathers around. Where do I find a father? You find a father if you find his family. A father's environment is family. Where do you find sons? You find sons with a father and a family. You don't find sons in an orphanage. You can't go to an orphanage to try find a father. You can't go to an orphanage to find the father. The environment, the habitat that God longs to dwell in is the habitat of family. He will manifest his goodness in the polar bear cage. He can manifest his goodness in the monkey cage. He can manifest his goodness in any environment, in any habitat. You can take him to the desert. You can take him to a fiery furnace. You can take him to a court of law where the Apostle Paul experiences goodness. You can take him to a prison cell. You can take him to a palace. You can take him to a jungle village. You can take him to a hospital. You can take him to, you just fill in the blank. You can take him anywhere you like and you can see his goodness break out through your life. But the place that he longs to dwell from is a place of family. If we're looking to build a habitat for God, a place where God can dwell in a habitation where it's not just a quick visit, it's not just dad's coming to the orphanage once a year to pay a visit to his kids who he's totally estranged from, and then he's going to go back to wherever he is at. If we want to create an environment that God feels like I can fully express myself in this environment, that environment, hands down, is an environment that is family. And this is why I just wanted to, because we talk about family all the time. And you might be wondering, like, why do we talk about family? And I'm saying this knowing that we've got a long way to go. But the reason I'm talking about this morning is because we all have a part to play in developing a family culture. It's not something that's just going to come from me. It's not something that's just going to come from Mama Karina or Sean and Renita or Dave. It's going to come from all of us as we come together and bring out our special sauce to the table. I'm talking about this because I know we have a long way to go. That's why I'm talking about it. Because if we were already there, I wouldn't need to talk about it. But the reason we talk about family is because we want a habitation. I want to host God well. And God feels most comfortable in an environment that is conducive to his life being expressed, which is family, because more than anything else, he's a father. Oh, wow. There are no orphans. There are only sons that don't believe they're sons. Jesus. And orphans just need love. They just need to be brought into family. Wow. Even in my notes, I've written down a sidetrack. It's such a bad idea to even put, like, rabbit trails in your notes. I don't know why I did that, but I wanted to read something to you that I read. It's just gone. Excuse me, getting there. Sorry if this feels unprofessional. Thank you, man. Thank you. I feel the father. I wanted to read something to you. This is something that I didn't write. This is something that a guy, Richard Rohr, wrote, who's a Franciscan monk. He's alive today, and he writes daily meditation, and he's doing a whole year meditating on love. And I just love the way this guy thinks, and he's semi-safe to quote. He's semi-safe to quote, and that's because I know that like lots of the people that I know quote him, so therefore he seems safe to quote. So I'm going to quote him. I've told you his name. Sometimes I don't tell you people's names because they're not safe to tell, but I think this guy's safe to tell, Richard Rohr. We owe a great deal of our Western thinking to the... Now, just bear with me for the first couple of chapters, and the last chapter is the part I want to focus on, but I have to build it first. Oh, yeah, sorry, paragraphs. Just testing you on that. Good listening. We owe a great deal of our Western thinking to the brilliant Greek philosopher and scientist Aristotle. Aristotle taught that there were 10 different qualities to all things. I'm not going to list all of the 10 of them. Two will suffice. He said that there was substance and there was relationship. Substance is that which is independent of all else and can stand on its own. This, by the way, I'm describing the root of that independent spirit. Aristotle ranks substance as the highest quality. In early Christian traditions, the West tried to build on Aristotle to prove that this God, whom we had come to understand as Trinitarian, in other words, three, was a substance. We didn't want an ephemeral old relationship with God, you know. We wanted a substantial God whom we could prove was as good as anybody else's God. This is just a bit of history for you. Yet when Jesus called himself the Son of the Father and yet one with the Father, he was giving clear primacy to relationship. Who you are is who you are in the Father, as he, Jesus, would put it. That is, your meaning and your identity. Jesus says to his Father, I have given them the glory you gave me so that they may be one, And what kind of one is he talking about? He's talking about as we are one, I in them and you in me, that they may be brought to perfection as one. That the world may know, what's the result? That the world may know that you sent me and that you loved them even as you loved me. We humans, now this is, he's gone back to not just quoting the Bible now, we humans are not a kind of independent substance, nor is any of creation. Everything exists in radical relationship, which we now call ecosystems, orbits, cycles, and circulatory systems. Yet to the Western mind, this mere relationship looks like second or third best. Who wants to just be a relationship? I want to be a self-made man or a self-made woman. I want to be substantial. Now, I know some of you, I'm preaching to the choir, so just bear with me. Now, we are prepared to say that God is not, nor does God need to be, substance in an Aristotelian sense of something independent of all else. God is relationship itself. And a last paragraph, here's what all that was setting me up to say. I would name salvation, now, what I'm about to say may send you into a process where you may not agree with this, that is okay. You may not agree with all of this and heartily agree with most of it, that's okay too. There's even some of what I'm about to read, which I'm still like, wow, that's awesome. I need to think about that a little bit longer. And if that's you, then bless that. I would name salvation as simply the readiness, the capacity, and the willingness to stay in relationship. As long as you show up with some degree of vulnerability, the Spirit can keep working. Now, there's something he didn't say there, but think about what he didn't say, which is the opposite of what he just said. We want the Spirit to be working. I want the Spirit moving. But there's something required in terms of a vulnerability that actually allows and creates a habitat where the Spirit can move. Self-sufficiency makes God experience impossible. Whoa. Please trust me on that. That's why Jesus shows up in this world as a naked, vulnerable one, a defenseless baby. Talk about utter relationship. Naked vulnerability means I'm going to let you influence me. I'm going to allow you to change me. I'm not journeying through this life on my own, just me and God, but you are important enough to me for me to allow myself to be vulnerable to you to the point where you have the capacity to change me. That's vulnerability. That's how you know you're living vulnerable in community. The way of Jesus is an invitation to a Trinitarian way of living, loving, and relating on earth as it is in the Godhead. We are intrinsically like the Trinity, living in an absolute relatedness. To stand out, now this part got me. To stand outside of this flow is to live within the deepest meaning of sin. We call this flow love. We really were made for love. Outside of it, we die very quickly. That independent spirit is that spirit that comes in with an assignment to dismantle the habitat that God's looking for to dwell in. That independent spirit is a spirit that comes in and says, you don't need the people around you. I think it's pretty, in a room like this, it's pretty, if we would go out in the streets of Whangarei, it would be different. But in a room like this, it's pretty easy and it's pretty comfortable. And everyone would agree with me that if I said, you need God, you would all, at least 99% of you would agree with me on that. That without God, you can't thrive in the life that God's assigned you to live. But for me to say, you need God, but you need more than God. Now that starts getting a little bit uncomfortable for people. But Genesis, you know, Adam's walking around in the cool of the day, face to face with God, unhindered, glorious, complete union with God. And in that context, God says it's not good for man to be alone. In other words, it's not good for you to be lonely, Adam. In other words, Adam, you don't have what you need with just me. You need someone else. You need human community. That actually you and God is not enough. All I need is you. Simply is not true. Yeah, in one sense, all you need is him, but Christ and use the hope of glory, plural. This relationship, this journey that we're journeying with God was never meant to be journeyed in independence and in isolation. It's meant to be journeyed in community to the point where I make myself vulnerable to you, which means that you have the capacity to change me. Which means that if I'm walking, now I don't walk this way with everybody. There are people that have earned the right to walk with me in this way. Sean and Renita have earned the right to walk with me in this way. If Sean or Renita says something to me, and I'm initially like, well, I don't know about that. I have made a decision to be vulnerable to them in a way where they have the capacity to change me, so I'm going to put weight on their voice. I've said, no, I'm not. There's not a wall up there. There's no wall up there. The wall's down. You have the capacity. You have the right. You have the invitation to speak into my life, and I have made a decision to listen to your voice because there is Christ in you, the hope of glory that I see. That I need community, and you need community, and we need community if we're going to have a habitation of the Father. Community is not just a Sunday. Now, some of you, I can hear you asking questions, and what I'm not doing today is I'm not answering all the questions, but what I hope will happen today is that you'll start asking questions, and maybe they'll never get answered. And maybe they'll just get answered one after the other. But I think it's a successful thing if I can talk about something that at the end of me talking about it, you have more questions than what you had when you came in. Because questions mean you're looking for something. And if you're looking for something, you're normally going to find something. In fact, you find whatever you're looking for. And that's the lesson of honor, right? If I'm looking for something that will disqualify your influence in my life, I'll find it every single time. But if instead I'm honoring you to the point where I am valuing who you are to me without tripping up over who you are not to me, then I can receive the life that God has put in you for me. The life that didn't come from you, but God put in you. Christ in you that has my name on it. Yeah, well, I mean, or just what the Apostle Paul said, Christ in you, the hope of glory. Is assigned, yeah, so here's a question. This is a question I'm asking myself, which I haven't answered to this question for myself, but I wanted to ask you this question because I think it's a good question to ask, and it's a good question to ask on a fairly regular basis. Are you on your journey, or are you a part of our journey? Like, when you refer to your journey with the Lord, are you referring to, this is my journey? Like, in your heart, does that mean to you, this is my journey? Or when you say, when you talk about your journey with the Lord, are you talking about it as, yeah, this is, it's our journey? Is it an our journey or is it a my journey? Now, the answer to the question, a semi-trick question, because the answer to the question is, it should be yes to both. You should be responsible. Now, sorry, I'm trying to not use the word should, so I'll rephrase that. Because Brené Brown has been influencing me. So, ideally, we are living in a place where we are taking responsibility for both our personal journey with the Lord. But then that we're also realizing that personal journey that we're walking with the Lord is in the context of an our journey that we are also partly responsible for. You are powerful for your part in our journey and your part in your journey. You are responsible for your part in our journey, and listen carefully to the next part, and your part in your journey. You're not responsible for your whole journey, but you are responsible for your part in your journey, just as you're responsible for our part in your for your part in our journey. Listen to this. Romans 12. Okay, yep, good. Nice, just looking at that clock. Romans 12, verse 4 says, "For as we have many members in one body, but all the members do not have the same function, so we being many are one body in Christ, but individually members of one another." By the way, this is a pretty common theme right through the New Testament. You can find similar language right the way through. But I've just picked Romans 12. But we are individual members of one body. So here's the thing, guys. Here's the thing. We are individual members. In other words, you're responsible for your part of the journey. You're an individual member. There's no one else like you. No one can express God the way that you are designed to express Him. No one knows Him the way you know Him. There's no one else on earth in past, present, or future that ever will be or ever has been that's just quite like you. You are a unique, and if you don't step up to the plate and shine your light, no one else is going to take your place. It's going to be something that is missing. You are to God, and in this life, you are irreplaceable. And without your contribution to the table, no one will ever taste what that meal looks like. You are responsible to steward the you that God made you to be. You have the primary responsibility in that. And nobody has a place to take that place away from you. So how are you doing? How are you doing? What season are you in right now? What are you going through in your life right now? What are you feeling on the inside right now? How are you doing expressing the truth of who God's called you to be? If you're having a hard time, what are you doing about that? Who are you leaning into for help? Who are you reading? What are you feeding on? Are you feeding on His faithfulness? What are you doing? You're responsible for you. You're responsible for the unique expression of who you are in the context of us. You're an individual member. And I tell you what, my daughter just got her tonsils out. And when the throat is disabled in the body, the whole body, let me tell you by experience, the whole body is feeling the weight of that disability. In fact, without the throat playing its part, the body can't even drink, the body can't even eat. In fact, it was so bad after a week after the surgery that we had to take Ari into hospital because she wouldn't drink for 2 days. She was completely dehydrated. She had to go on morphine and on a drip. And then in the hospital, what happens is you're in a room with four other people and so you can't sleep, and then you just get tired and you get weary and ugh. Thank God for hospitals, but it's not the best place if you want to get rest. And so now the rest of the body's feel like, because of the lack of food intake, because of the lack of water, because of the lack of rest, because of the lack of sleep. Oh my gosh, now she's tired. And not just her, but now I'm tired. Because now I haven't slept for 48 hours. What's the problem? Just one part of the body wasn't playing its part. Just one little part of the body, and when one part of the body isn't playing its part, isn't stewarding itself well, the whole body feels it. The hand can't fully be the hand without the throat. The hand can kind of be the hand. The hand can do stuff, but it can't do stuff with the strength that it's meant to do stuff with. One can put 1,000 to flight, but 2, 10,000, we need the different parts of the body. I told you last time I spoke, I was sick for 3 months with different things, and it just was like, oh my gosh. And just, you know, I could tell you all the stories of all the miracles that happened while I was sick for 3 months. And every time a miracle happened, I had another chance to be offended at God because He hadn't healed me. And I didn't take up that opportunity to be offended at God. I just chose to celebrate what He's doing without tripping up over what He's not doing. Until I went to get out of bed, straight after preaching that message on the Monday, I went to get out of bed and I did trip up. My little toe got tangled in the sheet in my bed and I heard this kook, and I totally snapped the bone in my little toe. And then I thought to myself, you know, I was looking forward to, for the first time in 3 months, being well enough to go for a dive or a surf. I was getting out of bed in excitement, thinking, yahoo, I'm going to, this is so awesome. My body's feeling amazing. I'm just going to go for it. Oh. You never really think about the significance of your little toe until you break it. It seems insignificant. You know, sometimes the welcome team, for example, might seem insignificant. Sometimes maybe you're on the sound desk, it might feel insignificant. Sometimes you can be doing stuff. Sometimes it's like, hey, I'm just a stay-at-home mom. What's my significance? Well, I'll tell you what, the body feels it when you're broken. When it's all going well, yeah, it's just a little toe. But then, oh my gosh, you don't realize the significance of that little part of the body until it's broken. That the body needs you to steward you well. And the toe can't be saying, oh, listen, you know, here I am stuck, little toe, and look at the elbow. The elbow is pretty awesome. You know, the elbow comes here and, you know, that guest elbow minister and comes up here and he starts speaking. And look, that's significant. That gets celebrated. Look, the elbow is amazing. Look how amazing that elbow is. Here's the thing, guys. You're not the elbow. You're the little toe. But just be the little toe, because the body needs the little toe. And the elbow can't be the elbow without the little toe. The elbow in my body couldn't get in my boat and hold on to the thing in my boat to be able to steer my motor to be able to get to the dive spot that I wanted to get to because my little toe was too smashed. It's what is it called? Is it referred pain? Deferred pain? Referred pain? It's referred disability. Referred disability. My toe's disabled. I'm feeling it in my elbow. Sorry, that might make sense. So we're individual members. No one is quite like you. No one can play the role that you play. We need you. And we've said that a lot of times. But probably, to be honest, we'll continue saying that. And we are individual members of one another, which means that you are responsible to receive and to contribute your life to the journey that is more than yours but is ours. You're an individual member, but your individuality, your individual membership, your individual functionality, your individual health, you cannot be in the place of health that God has designed you to be without you being connected to the body that you've been designed to be connected to. Just ask my auntie's thumb that got cut off while she was holding a rope to her horse. I mean, it's a graphic example. Sarah loves this example. You know, that thumb is like, please reattach me to the body because I'm not going to survive any time at all detached from the body. Amen? Yeah. So your significance, your health, your wholeness, your significance, your life depends on your attachment to the body. You're an individual member, but you're just an individual member unless you're attached to the body. It's impossible to find your significance outside of being attached to the body. And you're responsible within that body to both receive vulnerably from that body. You are responsible to press into the relationships within that body until you find Christ in them, the hope of glory, until you see the grace of God in the people next to you. And then you are responsible. No, you are responsible to steward that connection and to honor that connection to the point where you begin receiving the grace that God has assigned for you in that connection. You are responsible to receive life from the body, and you are also responsible to give your life into the body. And I think this is one of the great mysteries of communion. This is what a lifestyle of communion looks like. It looks like that we receive and we give. I receive your life to me and I say thank you. And in response, I say, I want to lay my life down to you because, man, I want your life to be the best it can be. And I know that it's not going to be the best it can be without me laying down my life to you. So we give our lives to one another. And I think this is what revival looks like when it's come to a place of habitation, when it's come to a place of maturity. What revival looks like when it's come to a place of habitation and maturity is it looks like we are a community that has laid down our lives for one another. To the point that the world looks and says, and all men will know that you're my disciples because you love one another. Yeah. Sorry, I'm neglecting this side severely. But so here's the thing, guys. To summarize, here's what I want to say, and then we're going to do something. Responsibilities. Your responsibilities are these, based on what I just said. To contribute you to us. If you're from another church, to contribute you to them. To find your connection, the place that God is setting you in within his body, and when you found that connection, to then give your life into that connection. Sometimes that might look like doing stuff that you don't really want to be doing. I can tell you, I can give you 1,000 examples of stuff that my hands do that they don't really want to be doing. Dishes is for an example. Putting the rubbish out is another example. I can give you thousands of examples of things that my hands don't really want to be doing, but that they serve the body in doing those things. Because my hands are given to the life of my body, if that makes sense. First responsibility is to contribute you to us. This is no order of priority, by the way. The second responsibility is receive us to you. I'm gonna develop the connections around me and the body that God has placed me into the point where the people, where there are people that I can point to in this body who have earned the right to speak into my life in a way where I'm vulnerable enough to them that they have the capacity to change me. Where in instances and in occasions, their opinion and what they say is going to hold more weight than what I say to myself. And if I didn't have that in my life, I just want to let you know, without giving examples, if I didn't have that in my life, I would not be standing here today. I would have given up. If I was left to my own opinion of myself, I would have given up years ago. If I hadn't given people like Andy, people like Sean, people like my wife a right to speak into my life with a greater volume than the words that go on in my head about my own life, then I would not be standing here today. If I hadn't made a decision to give people a place in my life that was weighty enough, if I hadn't become vulnerable to people to the point where they had the actual capacity to change me, where I actually had made a decision before I have the opportunity to put that decision into action to say, listen, you guys have influence in my life, and there's going to be occasions we're going to be drawing on that influence, and I need your voice to have more volume than mine. If I hadn't made that decision, I can guarantee you I wouldn't be staying here today. We have a responsibility to receive each other in honor. To receive each other in a way where we celebrate who we are without tripping up over who we're not. I'm not going to be everything you need me to be. I'm not going to be everything you want me to be because I'm in process. But you can look at me and you can find all the things that could disqualify me as your leader. I'm not saying this because I'm just giving myself as an example. And you will find them. I could give them to you. You don't even need to keep looking. I can just give you a list. Or we can walk in honor and we can look at one another. We can say, listen, there's things that you're not doing well, but look at all this. Look at all of who you are to me. Look at all the blessing you've brought into my life. Look at this. And we're not sweeping issues under the rug. We're not sweeping stuff under the carpet. But there's a place of honor. There's a place where celebration comes first. And then the third responsibility after contributing you to us, after receiving us to you, is this. To guard, protect, steward, and press into the connections within the body that God has knit you to. Practically, what do I mean by that? I mean, if you're thinking, man, listen, I've been here for a little bit of time now, and no one's even invited me out for a coffee. My question to you is, when did you invite someone out for a coffee? You are powerful to develop the connections that you long to develop. No one else knows what's going on in your heart unless you make it known. No one else knows that you want to catch up for coffee. I can be looking around the room and go, oh yeah, it looks like everyone's feeling pretty connected here. It's pretty amazing. Yep, you guys are connecting. This is awesome. Everyone feels amazing. And I'm just looking at you because I can't read what's going on in your heart. As much as some of you may want me to be able to do that. And maybe if I press into it, I could. But to be honest, I don't even want to. Because here's the thing. I want you to have a place to and an opportunity to express your heart. Well, no one's caught up with me for coffee. Well, ask someone out for coffee. Man, I've got this thing where I'm just feeling like this person doesn't get me, man. They don't get me, man. They're like every time I talk to them, it's like they just interrupt me or they change the topic and I'm trying to press in, but they just, you know, and I'm just going to go be friends with someone else. Hey, man, you're responsible for that connection. Before you go be friends with someone else, at least share your heart with that person. At least say, hey. Sometimes when we hang out, when we chat, you know, like I bring up stuff that's really important to my heart, and sometimes I feel like a little bit bummed out because it feels like you interrupt me. And I'm having a hard time like connecting. I feel like I've actually like drawn back a little bit. I wondered if we can process that. I wondered if we can actually, did you know that that's, I know you don't mean to be doing that, but did you know that that sometimes happens? Oh my gosh, man, I totally didn't realize. Or, Yeah, man, honestly, I've had people say that to me before, and I'm so sorry, I'm trying to work on that. I didn't realize I was doing it to you as well. And then there can be a restoration of relationship. But you're responsible. Before you bring your gift to the altar, if your brother is offended at you, go to them. In other words, before you lay down your life and worship me, go reconnect to the body that is my body. So they're the responsibilities. What I wanted to do is I wanted to ask the team to come up, the worship team. Yep. The worship team. And I just want them to play some music and be prepared to jump into a song of your choice. Like I said, I think that this is something that only works to the degree that we all participate in this. And I know that church is often set up for me to speak and you to listen. And it can sometimes look like, you know, I've had this mob of people chasing me, I've been running away from you, and then I've turned around, you've all stopped and sat down. And now you're all looking at me. You know, like it can sometimes feel like there's this thing of like, I speak and you listen, but there's actually the life that God's designed for us to live as a family is a life where we all contribute. And there are times where someone that like me does speak, and there is a time where you guys, it's helpful for you guys to listen. And I think it's healthy for that to happen, but not at the expense of you guys participating in being an actual living part of this community, being an actual strength to this community, and having this community be an actual practical strength to you. That honestly, like it's an independent spirit that comes to dismantle what God wants to do on the earth, that would cause people to step back and put walls up in community and say, listen, this is my walk of God. Tell you what, it's not your work, it's not my walk, it's our work. Our walk. He's not looking for a me or a you, he's looking for a we. And he'll hang out with a me, he'll hang out with a you, but he longs to express his glory in a we. So here's two questions. If you can just stand up, actually. And the only reason I would like you to stand up is because you've been sitting down for so long that sometimes just standing up can just help you feel like there was a transition in the meeting where you went from sitting down to standing up, which is enough to make you feel like even 1% more alive. Some of you might disagree with me. Some of you might think, well, actually, my legs feel 1% more not alive after standing up. But just stand up for long enough and it will change. And so what I want you to do is I just want you to, at the end of the day, His love is everything. At the end of the day, what we need before we need anything else is we need to experience God's love. We need to live in the experience of His love towards us to the point where we just say, God, you know, all these opinions I've put about myself, all these things I've said about myself, all these ways that I've been living, everything to do with me right now, the good, the bad, and the ugly, everything about me right now, I just open up to you. And I just surrender afresh to your love. And I think it's something that is helpful to do every day. It's just to make some space to just go, Papa, I'm turning my attention to you. I'm turning my affection to you. I'm turning my heart to you. I've had a great week. I've had a hard week. I've had a horrible week. I've had a terrible week. I've had a thrilling, exciting, wonderful, amazing week. Whatever kind of week you've had, doesn't matter. Just turn your heart to Him. Whether you've had a good or a bad week, it is what you need right now. It is more essential than the air you're breathing to experience His great love. to experience His great love. God is love, and he who abides in love abides in God, and God abides in him. Unless we abide in the vine, we cannot bear fruit. The name of the vine is love. And incidentally, we are on Vine Street. So we just turn our attention to you right now, Papa, and we just open up our hearts and we open up our hands and we open up our lives afresh and we just say, Papa, come. Holy Spirit, come. Papa, come and express the weight of your love in our hearts. And not just in our hearts, but over our lives, God. Over our lives, God. Over our lives, God. We want your love to explode so vibrantly on the inside of us that it literally becomes a living reality on the outside of us. God, that bubble of your love to surround us and baptize us so strongly that there is nothing else left but love. That love would baptize and consume like an all-consuming fire every aspect of our lives and transform our lives into your image so that we become that living expression of your love. God, we can't love one another without first receiving love to love one another with. So first of all, God, we position our hearts to receive from your love right now. You are so good. Just breathe his love in right now. Just lean back into his love right now. Just surrender however you know how. There's freedom in the room right now to do what you need to do, to surrender, to do what you need to do, to just let him in. If it's helpful for you to come up the front and just make a stand and just say, I'm just going to come and lie before you, kneel before you, you can do that. If you feel like for you right now to receive his love is just to stand on your head, then you can stand on your head. If you feel like for you to receive love right now is to just lean back with your arms out wide and just take a big deep breath and do that. If you want to start singing in tongues, you sing in tongues. Whatever it is for you, but just receive his love right now. Whatever, you're responsible for this part of your journey right now. You are responsible for this. Just receive. Some of you are feeling his love so strong, and others of you are like, well, I'm doing this, but I can't, I'm not feeling too much. Whatever you're feeling or not feeling, just take this as a moment to give God an opportunity, to give God some space. He might want to just baptize you in love, but he might want to just stand beside you right now and be with you right now. You might not feel any physical change around you right now, but it's literally God just saying, hey, I'm here and I've always been here. Just be aware of that. Just be aware of that. Just be aware of that. And in that place, here's what I want you to ask is these two questions. I felt two assignments that I was to release over you for this morning. And the assignments were, you have something to receive in this room. So the question is, God, what is there for me to receive in this room, and who do I go to receive it from? What is there for me to receive in this room, God? Because you're wanting to give me something right now, but my suspicion is it's not just going to come out of thin air. It's not just going to come out of your experience and his love right now, as glorious as that is, but the message is about pressing into relationship. And so there's actually a call to receive that from the body. And so there's something that God wants you to receive. Someone's carrying that grace from the Lord in their lives right now. Who do you go to receive? And in a moment, I'm going to give you an opportunity to go. And to actually, it takes humility to actually, but God gives grace to the humble, right? It takes humility to say, hey, you've got something I feel like I need. Would you pray for me? Would you bless me? Would you give that to me? And the person that you're approaching might not even know that they carry that, but just roll with it. And the other question is this, you have something to give. You have something to receive. And every time you come on a Sunday, every time you have a coffee meeting with someone, every time you go to the supermarket, you have something to receive. And the question is, where do I go to receive it, God? Sometimes it is just face to face with him, but other times it's pressing into community. And you have something to give. God, how do I give what I have to give? Who do I give this thing that you've given me to give to? Whose name does this grace have written on it? What do I have to give? It might be peace. It might be a mama's hug. It might be an encouraging word. It might be a prophetic word. It might be a gift of healing. It might be just a simple, I just wanted to bless your business. It might be, hey, I saw you praying and I've got a spirit of prayer that's on me right now and I'm just gonna bless you with that. It might be, hey, I just saw that, honestly, I just wanna give you a hug. I just wanna give you a hug because I feel like that what you need right now is a hug. I'm just gonna give you a hug. But you have something to give and you have something to receive. I want you to just ask the Spirit right now, what do I have to receive and where do I receive it from? Now, I know you're receiving it from Him, but you're receiving it through someone from Him. And what do I have to give? And what I wanted to ask is just if the team, if you guys could, I mean, sing a song or even sing something prophetically over the room as this takes place. And as the team sings, what I want to do is I just want to open it up and I want you guys to just begin ministering to one another. That's what it means to be part of the body. At least that's part of what it means. We're not going to invite the ministry team up. I just want you to minister to one another. I want you to go find the people that God's prompted you to receive something from, and I want you to go give what you have to give to those who God's prompted you to give something to. And you might even have 20 bucks in your pocket. It might literally be you give some money. I don't know, but you have something to give today. You have something to put on the table today. You have something of your life that God's blessed you with that you have to give today. Freely you've received, so freely give. So we're just going to open that up now, guys. We're going to end the meeting, but I just want to encourage you to do those two things and to begin to minister to one another as the team just sings. Bless you. Go ahead and do that. If you're waiting to receive, you know, just feel free to give as well. Wow.